Greet you all in Jesus' name this morning. It's good to be here and worship with you. Appreciated the service so far and thoughts that Matt shared in devotions. I sort of kind of went along a little bit with what I would like to speak about this morning. If you would, turn to Numbers chapter 13. I'm going to read quite a bit here in the Old Testament, and I'm going to get right to it. I'm going to read this whole chapter. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Send thou men, that they may search the land of Canaan, which I give unto the children of Israel. Of every tribe of their fathers shall ye send a man, every one a ruler among them. And Moses, by the commandment of the Lord, sent them from the wilderness of Paran. All those men were heads of the children of Israel. And these were their names. Of the tribe of Reuben, Shammua, the son of Zachar. I'm just going to read off their names here in the tribe. Of the tribe of Simeon, Shaphat. Of the tribe of Judah, Caleb. Of the tribe of Issachar, Igal. Of the tribe of Ephraim, Oshea. Of the tribe of Benjamin, Palti. Of the tribe of Zebulun, Gadiel. Of the tribe of Joseph, namely of the tribe of Manasseh, Gadi. Of the tribe of Dan, Amiel. Of the tribe of Asher, Sether. Of the tribe of Naphtali, Nabai. Of the tribe of Gad, Geul. These are the names of the men which Moses sent to spy out the land. And Moses called Oshea the son of Nun, Jehoshua. And Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan, and said unto them, Get ye up this way southward, and go up into the mountain, and see the land, what it is, and the people that dwell therein, whether they be strong or weak, few or many, and what the land is that they dwell in, whether it be good or bad, and what cities they be that they dwell in, whether in tents or in strongholds, and what the land is, whether it be fat or lean, whether there be good, whether there be wood therein or not, and be ye of good courage, and bring of the fruit of the land. Now the time was the time of the first ripe grapes. So they went up and searched the land from the wilderness of Zin, unto Rehob, as men came to Hamath. And they ascended by the south, and came unto Hebron, where Ahiman, Shishai, Talmai, the children of Anak were. Now Hebron was built 7 years before Zoan in Egypt. And they came unto the brook of Eshcol, and cut down from thence a branch with one cluster of grapes, and they bare it between two upon a staff, and they brought of the pomegranates and of the figs. The place was called the brook Eshcol, because of the cluster of grapes which the children of Israel cut down from thence. And they returned from searching of the land after 40 days. And they went and came to Moses and to Aaron and to all the congregation of the children of Israel unto the wilderness of Paran to Kadesh, and brought back word unto them and unto all the congregation, and showed them the fruit of the land. And they told him and said, We came unto the land whither thou sentest us, and surely it floweth with milk and honey, and this is the fruit of it. Nevertheless, the people be strong that dwell in the land, and the cities are walled and very great, and moreover we saw the children of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the south, and the Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites dwell in the mountains, and the Canaanites dwell by the sea and by the coast of Jordan. And Caleb stilled the people before Moses and said, Let us go up at once and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it. But the men that went up with him said, We be not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we. And they brought up an evil report of the land which they had searched unto the children of Israel, saying, The land through which we have gone to search it is a land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof. And all the people that we saw in it are men of great stature. And there we saw the giants, the sons of Anak, which came of the giants. And we were in our own sight as grasshoppers, and so were we in their sight. I'd title this message Caleb the Wholehearted. I'm going to focus in on his life primarily, but this is the first place where we notice his name. And here he is amongst this group of men who are sent out as spies to go out through the land of the promised land that they're going to take over. And we don't know a lot about these men except that they were obviously chosen for their leadership qualities. They were respected men, capable of doing whatever Moses was asking of them, and probably middle-aged. We know that Caleb was 40 years old. Possibly they left behind families. Most likely they did. And they left the children of Israel, the rest of their tribes, in the desert. And they went on this trip into the promised land and looked it over to see what it was like. And, you know, I'm picturing them. I was trying to imagine what it was like for them. Picturing them loaded up, whether they walked or took animals, I'm not sure. But they loaded up, no doubt, with food and water and all the things they were going to need. And because they had planned to be gone a long time, I don't know if they had planned exactly 40 days or not. And so they went out, and in 40 days, if you were driving a car, you could cover quite a lot of area. You could explore quite a bit. But they were limited to whatever their feet or the animal's feet could take them. But even so, I think they covered quite a bit of land. Interesting that side note is that 40 in the Bible is a number of testing, and that's the exact amount of time that they spent out there looking over this land. And the people of Israel were waiting for them to come back and tell them what it was like. I had to ask myself the question, why did God send out these spies into the land of Canaan? Because God had promised them the land. He knew what it was like. Why did he send them out? And I don't know if I know the answer fully to this, but you know, the land of Canaan is like a type of us entering into the Christian life. And he sent these spies out to see what was lying ahead of them. And what did they see? They saw a great land that was plentiful, had lots of food, it had lots of opportunities, but they also saw a lot of danger, and they saw a lot of battles, a lot of hardship ahead of them as well. They saw both of those things when they went out. And when they came back, that was the first thing they mentioned. Yeah, we saw this wonderful land. It's got lots of things that grow. It's got the fruit. They showed them the fruit. Must have been a huge branch of this grapevine that they brought to have to be carried between two people. And it says they brought figs and so on. But then they said, we saw the people. And we felt like grasshoppers, they said. And so the report went on and on, and it finally degenerated into this discouraging list of the things that they were going to have to face if they were going to go take over this land. And, you know, the longer it went, the worse, the bigger, the badder, the meaner the people, the stronger the cities that they saw. And it was a discouragement to the children of Israel, except for Caleb and Joshua. Caleb and Joshua had a different take on this whole thing. And I'd like to continue reading in chapter 14 and just see what they said and what happened after these two different reports were given. It says in verse 1 of 14, "And all the congregation lifted up their voice and cried, and the people wept that night. And all the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron. And the whole congregation said unto them, Would God that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would God we had died in this wilderness? And wherefore hath the Lord brought us into this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and our children should be a prey? Were it not better for us to return into Egypt? And they said one to another, Let us make a captain, and let us return into Egypt. Then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before all the assembly of the congregation of the children of Israel. And Joshua the son of Nun, and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, which were of them that searched the land, rent their clothes. And they spake unto all the company of the children of Israel, saying, The land which we pass through to search it is an exceeding good land. If the Lord delight in us, then he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land which floweth with milk and honey. Only rebel not ye against the Lord, neither fear ye the people of the land, for they are bread for us. Their defense is departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Fear them not. But all the congregation bade stone them with stones. And the glory of the Lord appeared in the tabernacle of the congregation before all the children of Israel. And the Lord said unto Moses, How long will this people provoke me? And how long will it be ere they believe me? For all the signs which I have showed among them, I will smite them with pestilence and disinherit them, and I will make of thee a greater nation and mightier than they. And Moses said unto the Lord, Then the Egyptians shall hear it, for thou broughtest up this people in thy might before among them, and they will tell it to the inhabitants of this land, for they have heard that thou, Lord, art among this people, that thou, Lord, art seen face to face, and that thy cloud standeth over them, and that thou goest before them by daytime in a pillar of cloud, and in a pillar of fire by night. So stopping there a little bit, we see that the Israelites were totally discouraged. It said their heart melted because of the report brought back by the 10 spies. They had the option of taking the report of the two, Caleb and Joshua, but the overwhelming testimony of the 10 convinced them, and their heart melted, and it said, they said, we'd be better to go back to Egypt. Forget this whole thing. We can't do it. And Moses, the Lord says to Moses, you know, I'm just going to destroy this people, and I'm going to make a great nation out of you. And, of course, we see how Moses interceded for the people. But, you know, I had to think, what was it that the people were doing by refusing to go into the land of Canaan? What were they doing? And, you know, to get some perspective on this, the land of Canaan had been promised to the Israelites for hundreds of years. Back in the time of Abraham, he had promised that this land is going to be yours and your children's. And on through Isaac and Jacob. And then if we read in Exodus, I'm just going to read a couple verses here that show how the many times God had repeated this promise to his people. It says in Exodus 3:17, "And I have promised to bring you up out of your misery in Egypt into the land of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites, a land flowing with milk and honey." And then when they were getting ready to leave Egypt, and they were going to remember the Passover, Moses said to the people, "Commemorate this day, the day you came out of Egypt." And then it says later on, "The Lord is going to bring you into the land of the Canaanites, the land he swore to your forefathers to give you." And then in Exodus 23, it's repeated again. He says, "I will be an enemy to your enemies, and I will oppose those who oppose you. My angel will go ahead of you and bring you into the land." And on it goes. It's amazing to me to see how many times God repeated this promise to the Israelites. And here they are, right at the brink of going into the land of Canaan that God has promised them over and over again, and how he's going to go in and his angel is going to drive out the enemy. But all of a sudden, they've lost all heart. They've lost all desire to go. They're afraid. They want to go back into Egypt. They wish they had died rather than this, than go on to this dangerous conquering of the land. So for the people and the spies to reject what God had promised them, to turn back and want to go the other way, it was a direct rejection of God. It was a direct rebellion against him. It was like saying, "God, we don't believe you. We don't believe you can do what you said you would do. We're not going to go there. We're going somewhere else because we don't believe you." And if entering the promised land is a type of us entering into the Christian life, it would be like us saying, "I'm not going to do what you want. I don't believe you can save me, God. I'm going to do what I want. I'm going to go where I want to go." And it's no wonder that God judged them in the way he did. If it wouldn't have been for Moses, they would have all been killed instantly. But instead, God gave them 40 years of wandering in the wilderness until that generation had died. But the 10 other spies were killed of a plague very shortly thereafter. So, but we see here, before this happened, that Jacob, Joshua, and Caleb both talked to the Israelites and warned them about what was going to happen. if I can find this. Yes, I read that part where they talked about how that God will take us into this land if he delights in us, and don't rebel against the Lord. And instead, they did. And in fact, the people were so angry with them, they wanted to stone them right there on the spot. And remember that Joshua and Caleb and the other 10 spies saw the same thing when they went to the land of Canaan. They both saw the beauty of the land and the fruit and the many opportunities that were there. And they both saw the giants and the walled cities and the fortified places. What was the difference? Joshua and Caleb saw all the same things, but they remembered and they believed that God's promise was true. They totally trusted in God, and they said, you know, it doesn't matter what the people look like, what the cities look like, we can have this land because God has promised it to us. But the people wouldn't listen, and for it, they were judged 40 years in the wilderness. And, you know, the sad part of it is that Joshua and Caleb were right with them in that punishment. They had to deal with that too. They were willing to go, but instead they had to wait another 40 years. But I'd like to really look at what the Lord said about Caleb in verse 24 of chapter 14. He said, "But my servant Caleb, because he hath another spirit in him and hath followed me fully, him will I bring into the land whereinto he went, and his seed shall possess it." And later on he includes Joshua in that promise. The NIV says a different spirit. And you know, you're looking at these two men and the other 10 spies, you wouldn't have seen a difference, maybe. I don't know what these men were physically, but you probably wouldn't have noticed the difference looking at them. But inside of them, they had a different spirit. They had a different attitude about life, about God. God is looking for that different spirit in us, too. He wants to see somebody who's wholeheartedly following him. He wants to see somebody who's given up everything else, who sees that God can overcome the obstacles in our lives. He wants us to see somebody who's fully given every area of his heart to him. Here's a quote I read. It says, "God is looking not for the man of ability, but for the man of faith, the man who refuses to doubt, the man who believes that God is sufficient. He is looking for the man who believes not only that God can, but is fully persuaded that God will." And I think that's what Caleb had and Joshua. They were persuaded that in spite of all the difficulties that they saw ahead of them, in spite of all the trouble they were going to face, God was going to be there and he was going to help them. He was going to be faithful to his promise. You know, I think today that we see many people doing the same thing as the majority here. Spiritually, they're doing the same thing. They begin their Christian walk. They're ready to go with God, and then they look out there and they see the difficulties. They see the opposition they're going to face from people around them. They're going to be made fun of. They're going to be the laughingstock, so to speak, of the world. They're going to have to give up some of the pleasures that they enjoy and are so addicted to. They're going to have to fight against the desires of their flesh. They're going to have to fight against the influence of the world. And they say, you know what? I don't want that. I'm not going to do that. And I think a lot of people at that point is where they leave. They turn around and, you know, what does it mean? They don't truly believe that God can do what he says he'll do. They don't truly believe that God's going to see them through it. They don't have the faith. So none of that generation survived. It says from age 20 up that God rejected all of them. They all died in the wilderness. And only Joshua and Caleb, out of all those men, thousands of men, are going to see the promised land. And, you know, they, like I said, they had to suffer along with the others as well. They had to wait another 40 years. And then in Numbers 26:63, it says, "These are they that were numbered by Moses and Eleazar the priest, who numbered the children of Israel in the plains of Moab by Jordan near Jericho. But among these there was not a man of them whom Moses and Aaron the priest numbered when they numbered the children of Israel in the wilderness of Sinai. For the Lord had said of them, they shall surely die in the wilderness. And there was not left a man of them, save Caleb the son of Jephunneh and Joshua the son of Nun." So here we find, moving on the story, we find Joshua and Caleb ready to enter the promised land. The two oldest men in all of Israel by probably 20 years or maybe more. And it wasn't that Caleb was such a powerful warrior that he wasn't afraid of the mighty men that they were going to find in Canaan. It wasn't that he just didn't fear death, that he was willing to go. He wasn't blind to the danger and the challenges that waited them. But he saw the same thing everyone else did, but he just saw a bigger God than they did. And he had more faith. He believed God. His whole heart was tied up in what God wanted him to do. Just like today, many times the world says it's ridiculous. Why are you doing what you're doing? The world makes fun of Christians. It says that, why are you doing those things? You don't need to do that. That's not important. Come on and do this. Do you have the wholeheartedness? Do you have that wholehearted faith and wholehearted attachment to God that every part of your heart wants to do what he wants to do? You know, there's many things out there that are more attractive. that are more desirable to the flesh. And the world every day tries to tear down the Christian. He tries to tear down the things that God wants us to do. And you know, sometimes I look out there and I think there are other people in other religions who are more devoted than many Christians are. Think of the Islamic faith. You know, they're totally misguided, wrong, and deceived. And yet many of them have a very powerful and wholehearted attachment to their religion. And they're going that direction. It's sad. And it's sad that many Christians don't have that same wholehearted desire to serve God. And there's going to be times like Caleb and Joshua that you're going to have to stand alone. Your friends around you are going to choose the wrong thing, and you're going to have to stand and decide, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to go a different direction. Your friends might choose the wrong music. They might choose the wrong places to go. And are you going to stand? Are you going to be wholeheartedly following God and choose the right? Maybe your friends are just waiting for you to do that. Maybe they're watching you, wondering what you're going to do. You know, I had to think about one part of what Matt said this morning. You know, he said that we need to have a heart that follows God before we can do service for others, to others. That's what we need first. And you know, that's so true. We can't be of service, and we can't be a good witness when our whole heart is not following God, when part of our heart is going somewhere else. You know, you might feel good doing something good for somebody, but if your whole heart isn't following the Lord, it's not really helping you. The man in the debate that we watched a couple Sunday evenings ago, he asked the question, can you be a follower of Jesus without following Jesus? And that's a very simple question, but you know, oftentimes we find part of our heart going somewhere else. We say we're a follower of Jesus, but part of our heart is tied up in entertainment or sports or work or whatever, and it hasn't been given to the Lord. It was a Sunday morning, and the church had once again been packed to the brim. With the modern music ministry and slick advertising, the pastor had attracted people from all around to come and watch. There were over 2,000 members of this congregation, and the church seemed to be going places. All was going well until one Sunday morning the pastor would never forget. Just before the sermon, two men came barging into the church in ski masks with machine guns by their sides. With a loud voice, they proclaimed, "All right, whoever wants to take a bullet for Jesus, stay seated. The rest of you can leave." Hundreds and hundreds of people fled for the doors as fast as they could. At the end of the melee, there were only about 10 people who remained seated in their pews. At this, the two gunmen took off their masks. To the pastor's surprise, they were elders of the church. They turned to the pastor and said, "We got rid of the hypocrites. Now you can talk. You can have your sermon." You know, it's sort of a funny story, but at the same time, it brings out the point. If that would happen, where would we be? Would we be the people that are seated in the pew, or would we be the ones going out the door? Okay, I'm going to move on a little bit about Caleb, speaking more about what he did. There's another story that really is interesting. We know that he was 40 years old when he went as a spy into the land of Canaan, so he's 80 years old when it's about time to enter the land of Canaan. He's 80 years old. He's an old man. And Moses chooses him once again to help with something. He's going to help assign the land to the individual tribes. And then I'd like to turn to Joshua, chapter 14, I believe it is. No, that's not right. That's where his name appears. Let's see. Okay, I'm trying to find this other story here. If I can't find it, I'll have to skip over that. Okay, it's in Joshua, it is in 14. Chapter 14, verse 6. So the land has been mostly divided up, I think, at this point, but there's still a lot of conquering to be done. Then the children of Judah came unto Joshua in Gilgal, and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, said unto him, Thou knowest the things that the Lord said unto Moses, the man of God, concerning me and thee in Kadesh Barnea. 40 years old was I when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to spy out the land, and I brought him word again as it was in mine heart. Nevertheless, my brethren that went up with me made the heart of the people melt, but I wholly followed the Lord my God. And Moses sware on that day, saying, Surely the land whereon thy feet have trodden shall be thine inheritance and thy children's forever, because thou hast wholly followed the Lord my God. And now, behold, the Lord hath kept me alive. And he said, These 45 years, even since the Lord spake his word unto Moses, while the children of Israel wandered in the wilderness, and now, lo, I am this day 85 years old. And yet I am as strong this day as I was in the day that Moses sent me. As my strength was then, even so is my strength now, for war, both to go out and to come in. Now therefore give me this mountain whereof the Lord spake in that day, for thou heardest in that day how the Anakims were there, and that the cities were great and fenced. If so be the Lord will be with me, then I shall be able to drive them out, as the Lord said. And Joshua blessed him, and gave unto Caleb the son of Jephunneh Hebron for an inheritance. Hebron therefore became the inheritance of Caleb the son of Jephunneh the Kenizzite unto this day, because that he wholly followed the Lord God of Israel. So here we see, amazingly, Caleb, 85 years old. He's back in Canaan. He's an old man, by far one of the oldest men in Israel, him and Joshua. The Lord has kept him young and healthy all those years in the wilderness. And you know, they come to Canaan, they're conquering, there's many battles to be won, to be fought. And Caleb could have said, you know, I'm leaving the rest of this for these younger men, they're the next generation. Joshua and I are the two oldest here. Surely we can sort of supervise. We don't have to get too involved in this. And I'm going to just sit back and watch the others conquer this land. That wasn't his attitude at all. He had been a pillar of faith and wholeheartedness in Israel for all those years, and he wasn't about to stop now. There was no lukewarmness in Caleb. He went on, and he came to Joshua with this plan. You know, the Lord promised this land to me, and this was the very land he had walked across when he spied it, the very people that he had seen, the giants, they were all living in this area. Probably one of the more difficult areas of Canaan to conquer. But he said, no, that's the part I want. That's the part that was promised to me. And it doesn't melt my heart. I'm going to go for it. And so that's what he did. And, you know, it's just an amazing testimony of taking God seriously, of taking God at his word and of making his heart follow that completely. He could have waited back. He could have sat back and let the younger generation take it over. But he didn't. And I had to think of this man's testimony to the people around him. How did they look at him? Here he was. He must have inspired a lot of people to see this older man doing all that he did. He must have inspired the younger generation a great deal. And I had to think, how would I inspire the generation below me in the future or right now? How do I affect them? Are they encouraged to be wholehearted and faithful today because of my example? I think of my grandpa. He died 6 years ago this month, but his life is still an encouragement to me and to many other people. I still think about the things that he said, that his attitudes about life, and it encourages me. It keeps me going. And that's what we can think of too. Think of our lives and how they're going to affect the generation that comes after us. Are they going to look back and say, yeah, that, think about him. He was a faithful person. He was useful. He did what the Lord wanted him to do, and he built up the church. You know, it can go the other way too. I had to think of in Nazi Germany, there were many Christian people, many churches in Germany at that time. the sad thing is that not very many of them stood up to what the Nazis were promoting. It says that, I read a little statistic, says that, that there was 95% of the people were would have called themselves Christians and were either part of a Protestant or a Catholic group. But yet, Hitler was able to sell 5 million copies of his little book in a very short time. And his book was very anti-Semitic. It was very, his ideas were totally ungodly. And many among the people of the churches were silent. They didn't say anything. They were very patriotic, and that patriotism drug them the direction that the country was going. And they didn't stand up and say, this is wrong. We can't go this way. We have to speak out. We have to help those that are being persecuted, and it's not godly. Unfortunately, the memories that they left were not that great. There were many faithful people. I'm not saying there weren't, but there was too many that did not stand up, were afraid, and just went along with what was happening. So how would we respond in a place, in a time like that, where the world around us, the government around us, is taking us one direction? And are we going to stand up for the principles of the Bible? You know, all around us, the Bible teachings like non-resistance and separation and just simple obedience to the Word of God are all being trampled down. They're being torn down and made fun of. And you know, we have an option. We can duck our heads and just kind of disappear in the crowd, or we can sort of stand out like a sore thumb as being people that follow God's Word wholeheartedly. You know, we can know if we wholeheartedly follow God that He wholeheartedly supports us, that He's wholeheartedly on our side. Does God have our whole heart? In closing, is it splintered up into different pieces? Some of it here in whatever, sports and entertainment? Or does God have it all? Is it all there for Him? You know, it's often those little day-to-day decisions that make this evident in our lives. Are we concerned daily with our relationship with the Lord? Is that a priority? Or do our priorities go somewhere else? Do we find that when things really get difficult, when the time is really pressed down and we just have little minutes of time to do things that we want to do, God gets the second best? In the Old Testament, they gave a first fruits offering. And, you know, that is the type of how our lives should be. The first fruits of what we make, of what we are, ought to go to God. Our first loyalty, our first thought, our first intention to do something should be to God. Galatians 5:22 says, "But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance. Against such there is no law, and they that are Christ have crucified the flesh with the affections and lusts." So that's what it means to have your whole heart following after God. So when the difficulties come, we need to ask, are we going to be like the 10 spies who said, you know, I can't face that. That looks too hard. I don't really know if I can do it with God, even, you know, I don't know if I believe God. Or are we going to look at it like Caleb and Joshua, who saw all the same problems, all the same difficulties, and they said, you know what, God promised it to us. It doesn't matter what those difficulties are. I'm going to go, and I'm going to do it wholeheartedly. So my challenge for you is to take the life of Caleb, who is called wholehearted, and take the lesson that he gave to us and apply it to your life today. I'll close with that. Any testimonies?